Down to Business with Bobby Kerr.
Brought to you by Bank of Ireland
on News Talk.
Now, Harry Aburi joins me today to discuss his provocative new book, Ideas Don't Die, Companies Do. In it, he challenges the conventional wisdom of customer obsession and argues that the future belongs to organisations obsessed with ideas, not customers. Harry, a very good morning to you.
Morning, Bobby. Thank you for having me on your show.
Not at all. Great to talk to you. Now, talk to me about this proposal that companies should shift from being customer-obsessed, which we know many companies are, to being idea-obsessed. Can you just maybe explain the thinking behind that shift and why now?
Sure. You know, over the last 10, 15 years, as we've seen more and more digital native companies come into existence, what we have seen is the concept of customer obsession take over the world. And this has been made very popular by Amazon itself, where customer obsession continues to drive efficiencies and productivity of an organization that wants to deliver faster, better, and cheaper. But what I have noticed, and in my research that I've seen, is that these companies that are customer obsessed go after productivity and efficiencies, not necessarily after innovation. Faster, better, and cheaper has not delivered any more innovation to customers other than just being much more convenient to them as products and services. And conversely, when you look at the world in terms of where we are going with technology, we increasingly have to place a premium on things like curiosity and imagination for the future of our businesses and the world. And that has been the trigger the reason why I had to write the book.
Okay. Let's just peel it back a bit. And if we talk about a company that is good at allowing ideas to be developed, to be nurtured, to be, I suppose, explored properly, and, you know, maybe given the space, the money, the resources to allow them to either thrive or fail. So would I be right in saying in a lot of companies, you know, if you come forward with an idea you and it fails, you basically feel threatened yourself. So, you know, a lot of companies talk about this culture of openness and ideas, but sometimes if you're the guy who comes forward with the wrong idea, you can end up losing your job.
Yes, and that in, therein lies what I call as the thinking on edges framework or mindset that leaders need to adopt in companies. The reason why companies fail is not because of resources. Of course, it matters in terms of how much funding that you have and the capacity of the company to withstand a failure. But much before all of that happens, there are a certain set of what I call as mindset shifts in leaders and companies that have to take place. And that's what I call as thinking on the edges. Very simply put, there are two dimensions of thinking. One, you're always thinking about your products and experiences, ideas from your industry, and you're very focused on you as an enterprise. On the other dimension, which is the curiosity dimension, you're constantly looking at the features your customers want. You're looking at the products and experiences that your customers like from other companies or other industries. You're looking at emerging ideas from other industries that might disrupt you. And you're trying to play to the larger ecosystem. So when an idea comes, if you're on the dimension of here and now, my products, my services, my disruption, and if you're not on what the customers are experiencing, what the other industries are innovating, what are the other products and services from other companies that your customers love, that dichotomy of thinking, if you don't balance it well enough, you land up in failure.
Interesting you say that. And maybe you might give us some examples of that, Harry, where I suppose an idea in one company fails can often then be the same idea or a version of the same idea can be recreated in another company and work. Why so would that be the case? Would it be the market at a particular time mightn't have been right for the idea or circumstances such as that?
Let me give you two different examples because it's a little nuanced in terms of how it works or doesn't work. There is a company called Zoom that is a robotics company that got conceptualized around pizza making. So their idea was to make a pizza while the van or the truck or the mini food truck was driving to the house to deliver the pizza. So literally when the order comes in, the driver of the truck starts driving and the pizza bot and the back of the van starts making the pizza. Great idea. It's a very repeatable idea. It drives efficiency, but they landed up in some very simple problems. The pizza, while it was being made by the bot, the cheese kept sliding off all the time when the van kept turning. And in order to solve that, they had to put humans back at work. So, and then they couldn't plug into the larger ecosystem of the food delivery system, the food ordering ecosystem, etc. And therefore, they struggled to succeed. Conversely, you see an industrial robotics company, which is ABB. What they have done with robotics is they've created an entire ecosystem of players, software players, players who can understand the dexterity of the bot required either in the warehouse or in the kitchen. So the way ABB approached it is to saying, okay, it has to fit into the larger purpose, and therefore it has to do a certain number of tasks. And the learning from that is what now a company called Miso Robotics is doing. Miso Robotics is a kitchen bot that does outstanding burgers. It flips burgers very well, right? As good as a human. And what we've seen with Miso Robotics is they've learned from ABB, they've learned from Zoom and other examples, and they get in the food robotics equation correct, if you may, right? But the reason why they're successful is they're learning from industries outside of them. They're not necessarily learning from industries within the food industry, within the food application sector, if you may.
Is it not human nature that if I develop a successful product, just say Apple and its iPhone, that most of the ideas going forward will be maybe derivatives of that? In other words, I'm comforted that I'm an expert at this phone. I do it really well. So all my thinking maybe is too close to that phone. We become obsessed with our own products or services to a point that we can't see outside of that arena.
What you're describing is the dimension of edges that I mentioned, where you're so much in love with your products and services that you're blinded to influences that are disruptive or are going to disrupt you. Let's take the case of Apple itself, right? So what is interesting is that the first touchscreen was actually developed by CERN in 1977. And it actually developed in 1972. It was brought into a touchscreen in 1977. Subsequently, Casio watch, many, many years later, almost 10 years later, 1983, the Casio watch put the touchscreen on their watch, which was very popular. And incidentally, iPhone was not the first. LG created a phone called Prada in 2006, and IBM created something called Simon in 1994, which had touchscreens on the phones. The reason why Apple's iPhone in 2007 became very successful is they mastered how consumers interact, how people interact with devices, how people interact with phones. They didn't invent it because it was a phone that Steve Jobs came up with. The technology existed. But consequently, what you see is that Apple as a company hasn't come up with too many new product categories. I think the most successful product after the iPhone and the iPad, I would say, is the AirPods, because you know it creates a significant percentage of revenue for them, and it's created a huge category. But I think just falling in love with your products is not imaginative enough for the future of your company.
But does it not tell you something else, Harry, that if you're like Apple and you develop a reputation for quality, a reputation for, you know, really good technology, that you're best placed to take the next idea? In other words, there's a whole band of consumers out there who will embrace Apple because of the brand that it's created. So theoretically, at least, Apple should be best placed to to come up with the next product, not some unknown disruptor.
Absolutely. And you've nailed it. The reason why consumers flock to a company is because they believe that that company will come up with the next big idea. And that is the reason I say unimaginative leaders are the greatest threat to the future of a company. They come to Apple because of iPhone, because of iPad, because of AirPods. But they come primarily back to Apple because they know the next big product that they create will wow the customer, will wow the experience, and it'll fit beautifully into the environment and the ecosystem of the other devices and services that I have from Apple. So the consumers and customers come to companies because of the future promise of innovation and imagination the company has, not necessarily because I'm giving great service today. Of course, that is a qualifier.
So finally then, Harry, can I ask you then about, I suppose, the longevity of businesses? We've seen over the years, if we look at the S&P 500, we've seen the, I suppose, companies, the average lifestyle or lifespan was 15 years originally. I think between 1964 and 2016, it was 33 to 24 years. And that 15 years is expected to drop to 12 years. So are we going to see more companies lasting less and less time?
I am not sure probably that would be the case, because I think there are companies coming up with a lasting brand value and a proposition. Nvidia is one of them. Amazon will continue to reinvent itself in many places. And there are so many brilliant startups coming across globally in different sectors. But I think the right measure of disruption would be how long does the business model last? Yeah. What I have seen is the average span of a business model today is about 3.2 years. And this is down from almost 7 to 8 years, 10, 15 years ago. And that is a big one, because the company is always going to reinvent itself every 3 years. But we as humans have classically been trained to build a little more permanence in what we do in terms of frameworks, in terms of concepts, processes, technology. There is a state of what I call as impermanence in the nature of business models today. Companies that can master it, I think, is where they'll be successful.
All right. Well, look, it's a fascinating book. It's well worth a read. Ideas don't die. Companies do. The author is Harry Aburi. Harry, thanks so much for joining us this morning and sharing your wisdom with us.
Thank you so much.
Down to Business with Bobby Kerr.
Brought to you by Bank of Ireland.
Saturday morning at 11 on News Talk.